The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Rick Romanois, who is the director of the new film Shelter. It's in theaters this weekend. It's going to be real exciting for folks who love Jason Statham movies. I am a big Jason Statham fan. I was very excited to see this. It's always good to get him on the big screen. And I'm also a fan of Mr. Waugh's movies because he is doing a very specific sort of thing that I feel like gets short shrift these days. He is making the straight up action movie programmer type film that we just don't get a lot of anymore. So I'm excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the endorsement.
So let's talk a little bit about Shelter, because I was going back through some of your old interviews from years ago. You were talking about the movie Snitch, which starred Dwayne Johnson. And you have this great quote about how you want to make movies that have relevance, that have social relevance. And that's a movie kind of about prison reform and all sorts of things. But this movie definitely feels very relevant in the age of social monitoring, social reconnaissance on the regular people of the world. What were you looking at when you were making this film? Did you see some relevance there?
Yeah, I think, look, Jason Statham had called me about this script that he was super passionate about, and I'm a fan of him like you. And when I read it, I saw exactly what he did, that, yeah, you're going to get a big action ride and love the movie star that we love, that we come to know and love, that can do unbelievable feats, but you're going to see something really fresh and see a different version of him than we've seen in a long time, playing into his own vulnerabilities, a man living in exile and having a great emotional journey through this big action ride. And the two kind of themes that really struck a chord with me that I felt are very relevant today. One is what you were talking about. It's not about the technology. It's about where we think justice, what does justice mean today? You know, what is the relevancy of where the moral compass is, everybody's point of view of what, where their own morality lies. What does justice really mean? Are we inflicting our own agendas and opinions into things, or are we back into the balance of justice? And I love that the central character that Jason plays is your lens into that, a man that was sent out to do the greater good and battle the evil forces out there, until suddenly that line in the sand got so blurred that he had to question whether he was doing the greater good, or is he doing somebody else's bidding for their own self-interest. And I love that. I love that kind of moral question about it and the price that he pays by hanging up the gun and saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I wish more people did that. And especially when we send them out into harm's way, and that's just not on the battlefield, but that's in society, right? We're dealing with that worldwide. But it also speaks to a personal thing that I think relates to many people, if not all of us, where we can all put ourselves into a form of exile. You know, it doesn't need a pandemic to suddenly get us cast away from society, but, you know, trauma, loss, you know, there's so many different emotional underpinnings that suddenly put us in a place where we are quickly reminded how much we need each other, you know, and that we're social creatures. And I love that these two central characters find one another through these unbelievable events, you know, of him saving this young girl from the sea, only to realize she's probably there to save him. And it's really about their own versions of exile, you know, one put in self-exile and the other one not by her choosing. And yet they find family, you know. So I love that there's a very relatable central qualities that are on a foundational level of character, as well as controversial themes that wrapped around the plot and give a bigger scope to things.
Yeah, let's why don't you just give people the elevator pitch on this movie, since, you know, they have not seen it yet. I've seen it, you've seen it, you've lived it for these last few months. But what's the movie actually about?
It's this really fresh take on getting back to classic storytelling, where we're not doing the clickbait mentality and dumping the entire movie on you in the first 3 minutes. And so you meet this mysterious man who's living in this abandoned lighthouse out in the middle of this remote island. And this young girl and her uncle keep bringing him supplies every week. And she's trying to acknowledge him, but he's completely shut out and not giving her the time of day until a storm hits. And he ends up having to save her in the stormy seas. And once she's injured and he has to try to take care of her, it exposes them to the Hounds, a faction of people that you realize that he has been put in exile for 10 years who want him dead. And they come to try to kill him, and it puts her in harm's way. And he ends up with that great moral dilemma that I love about antihero movies. You know, the man with the gun from like Creasy and Man on Fire and Jean Reno and The Professional, back to Shane, you know, in the 1950s, of when they find family and yet that dark shadow and that way of the gun that beholds them puts the person that they love in harm's way. And so they have a choice. Do I give them shelter and get away from them? Or do I stay in my own self-interest and finally have family and don't want to lose it? So I love that moral conflict that the movie talks about and voices in an emotional way, then takes you into action that doesn't feel like it's just action done for the sake of action. I mean, that feels mindless to me. It mm-hmm. propels you into these set pieces through the characters. So you're immersed in their world and immersed in the action in a way that you're attached to it and feeling it vicariously through them.
Yeah, the movie, as I was watching it last night, the movie that Shelter most called to mind for me from Jason Statham's body of work is a movie called Hummingbird. I think it was mm-hmm. called Redemption in the United States. That's another one that's kind of a slow burn start. It takes a little bit to ramp up. And then once the action starts, it does have that deeper quality to it that you feel that very much here. This is not a movie of as you say, the sort that we're used to, where you get the whole plot in the first 3 minutes and then it's just set piece, set piece, set piece. We spend a solid 30 minutes on the island where he has kind of exiled himself off to, 40 mm-hmm. minutes. It's a long chunk of the movie, but it lets you get to know him and his view of the world and kind of his view of himself, which is really interesting and also has to be that has to be kind of scary as a filmmaker, right? You're trusting the audience a little bit to stay with you as you're leading them on this journey.
Yeah, thank God. I think that, structurally, I'll bring up the comparison we did earlier about Man on Fire. I mean, Creasy and that young girl played by Dakota Fanning, you're not doing anything but being with them for a good half hour in that movie to really understand who they are until she's suddenly snatched and he's unleashed. And if you don't have that time to build, then you're not going to be emotionally connected. You're just going to watch a man wreaking havoc to get a young girl back. And I love that we stuck to our guns and really kept into more of a classic kind of structure of storytelling and then take you on a big thrill ride that you're attached to. And it's been great, Sonny, because I've been doing a number of screenings around the country and people see it, a fresh version of Jason Statham, a fresh version of back to the movies where you feel like you're emotionally attached to what you're watching and you're on your edge of the seat at the same time. So that 2 hours of escapism doesn't feel like you're just eyes glaze over doing your taxes in your head because you're not attached to the story.
Yeah. Let's talk about shooting with Statham, because you've now worked with Dwayne Johnson, Gerard Butler, of course. You've made a number of movies with him. You've got one out in theaters right now with Gerard Butler, as a matter of fact. Greenland 2, Migration. And now Jason Statham. And that's really interesting because it does feel in a very real way like they are three of the last pure action stars. They are like, those are the guys who you're like, okay, I'm gonna go see an action movie. Who is in it? And the odds are it's one of those three. What does Statham bring to the table that's a little bit different from Gerard Butler or Dwayne Johnson?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like the same, and not to put this on you, but it's the same question of like, what's different between three directors? They're different, three different voices, like three different people. And what I like about each of them is they're really into their own brands. And speaking about Jason Statham, what I like about Jason is he's as authentic in his real life as he is in his characters, where he is a real fighter and he's a devoted family man. You know, he's not only with his sons and his wife, but his parents came to set, and he lives with this kind of code and integrity that that you see in a lot of his characters. And that really is about this guy, Michael Mason. And I love that, you know, and working with Dwayne Johnson, Dwayne has a lot of those same qualities. But again, it's like you could put me and two other directors on the same script and they're going to be three different versions. And I think each of those three movie stars are going to do different versions of each thing. What I loved is, which is my mantra, is just focusing on who I'm working with and bringing the best out of each other and seeing what our two voices together can do. And I love what Jason and I brought to this. I'm very passionate about this story, and I'm excited for people to go see it.
So I want to talk a little bit more about this with you in a second. But you got your start in Hollywood as a stuntman. You worked on a bunch of great movies. We can maybe get a story or two about that from you. I would love that. But what's really interesting in Shelter and Greenland, some of your other stuff, is seeing how you work with these actors to highlight their personal strengths, right? There's just this amazing sequence, I don't know, with maybe 20 minutes left of Shelter, where you see Jason Statham do the Jason Statham thing, right? He's doing his kind of martial arts, very specific kind of fighting that you see from him. And it's really wonderful. And that's not all he does in this movie. That's not all, but it is like a very specific thing. When you were sitting there working on how to put that sequence together with him, what was that like? What's the planning process there like with you and Jason Statham on set, trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to make this look? What moves are you going to do? What do you feel comfortable doing?
I think it's, it's really astute what you just said, but it's about bringing out the best of one another. So I'm going to look at what makes Jason Statham, not only what I think his fan base wants, but it's more of who he is and his authenticity and the way he fights. Why would I change the way he fights? Fight the way you fight and be who you are. And what I love about that is he reciprocated it as me as a filmmaker. He allowed me not to have to be in his mold. Let me be audacious and bring my brand, bring my sense of storytelling to the table. So you get hopefully two people that are living and dying by their own sword of what their narrative is and how they go about things and trying to elevate each other, but being true to who we are. That's the essence of everything for me. My great mentor was Tony Scott. And I loved Tony and I loved everything about him and how he lived his life and how he was on set and the respect that he gave people and that fierce intensity to be original, and that he would always live or die by his own sword. He would, I mean, True Romance to Man on Fire to Top Gun. I mean, you can go through them. They're all uniquely different, but there's a brand of Tony Scott in them all. That sense of fearless kind of filmmaking, whether they were huge hits or flopped, it didn't matter. He was going to put everything into it. And that's kind of where I live my life. You know, it's scary as hell, you know, when you're not trying to do the status quo, emulate others and be original, but still entertain at the same time. And remembering the commerciality of why we do this. I think that there's different lanes of Are you trying to win awards? Are you trying to shock people? Or are you trying to entertain? And I'm an entertainer, but I would love to do it in a way that is thought-provoking and where the movies that I loved growing up, like with Sidney Lumet, where you got to watch a great bank heist, but it had something to say, like Dog Day Afternoon, and you were talking about it afterwards, you know, and you were and having a debate of what it was trying to say at its core. And that's what I'm after. Entertainment, and then walk out of there and not solve world hunger or tell you my opinion, but hopefully it's creating a conversation.
What do you hope the conversation that people have coming out of shelter is? What's the after dinner drinks or the, you know, the after screening bar chatter like in your ideal world after shelter?
It's to unpack the two themes. We live in a very divisive world, and I think people are really fed up with it. You're seeing enough people starting to push back today, and enough, you know, like why don't we start getting along, with even though we are from different worlds and of different opinions and different social agendas, and that we need each other, right? And then on a bigger level, it's also what does justice mean today? Where is that line in the sand? Where do we get our equilibrium back to where we live in democratic countries, democratic worlds, that we're supposed to have a good ruling of right or wrong? And what is lawful and what is not. And it feels like it's been more blurred than ever of where that line in the sand is. And I think it's a good thing to look at. That's not my opinion of what's right or wrong, but it's like when I made Shot Caller and a lot of people would ask me what I thought prison reform is, and I can tell you, I have no idea, but I can tell you that violence breeds violence and that it's a subculture and in its own microcosm. It's a very dangerous place and is, I don't think, rehabilitating the majority of people that go in there. So let's talk about it. Let's have a debate about it, and hopefully I can entertain you at the same time.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I will say, if folks out there have not seen Shot Caller, they should. It's one of the most terrifying movies I've ever seen, in the sense that I watch that. My main takeaway was, all right, never drink or drive. Do not wind up in a situation where you could wind up in a prison like that. But it is also great and fierce. That is a fierce movie. That is not a movie that shies away from the reality and the ugliness of that world, which is unusual. You don't get a lot of that, certainly not from feature filmmaking, certainly not from stuff that is intended to be popular, but that is a striking, it's a movie that sticks with you for sure.
Mm. Thank you. I think they're all different levels. Cause I think tone is really important in movies. You know, Shot Caller's tone is different than Shelter's, different than Greenland's, different than Angel Has Fallen, different than other movies that I made. So I'm always thinking about tonality of what is the piece of commerce that I'm making that is supposed to be a cinematic experience and be worldwide in theaters and to go let you escape for 2 hours, but also then being true to what the tone should be, and how I can convey the things that I want you to hopefully take away and think about and be immersed in. And there's different levels of that. Shot Caller, because of the subject matter, allows you to be in a far grittier tone and kind of really be in there. But I hope what all my movies do is they don't pull any punches. You know, in Greenland, you meet which was my favorite thing about Chris Sparling's script, was those disaster movies. They're always the perfect, shiny family. They're, everything's good. They're going to an outing, and then the world falls apart. No, they were us. They're two, a husband and wife, that were trying to figure out how to get back together, miles apart, a kid not knowing where his future is with his parents shattered. And then life or death hits him, and it rebalances everything about what matters the most. And you find out that what he did is, and what hero do you want that committed adultery and has to admit to it to her father and deal with that? And then at the end of that movie, it's one of those comet movies where they mostly thwart the comet, right? They blow it up. It doesn't hit Earth. Well, no, we jacked you up. We destroyed the Earth enough again. And so I want my movies to be authentic. So then I hope that the plot is authentic as well. We are going to take cinematic license, but we're not going to pull any punches. And I would say the end of Shelter doesn't pull punches either. You know, that choice of what a hero needs to do, especially if he's an anti-hero that has a dark cloud following him. Do I shelter a young girl and do better for her, or what's best for her, versus my own selfish ambitions of, I finally got family and I don't want to lose that?
Family is a running kind of theme through your work. I mean, I remember when I saw Greenland, my main takeaway from this as a father of young children myself was, this pushes all of the terrified parent buttons. This is the movie that keeps you on the edge of your seat if you have kids, because this is the scariest thing imaginable. And Shelter is not, is, again, as you say, very, it's tonally different. He's protecting this girl in a different way. They have a slightly different relationship. But it is, once again, kind of about what it means to have family, which is really interesting. When you were working with the young actress whose name, I'm sorry,
Bodie Ray Brannick, I'll save you, because I saw the spelling of it, I was like, I'm in trouble.
Thank you. I'm glad you did that for me, so I didn't have to stumble over it. The relationship that those two have is, again, it's really interesting. It's really touching. And it feels very, very parental. It feels very familial. How, when you were working with her, cause she's, you know, she's a young actress. She's not as experienced as Jason Statham. How did you bring your own kind of family experience, family life, fatherhood, parenthood? You have kids, right? I'm sorry. I should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. How did that all help inform how you brought her performance out?
Luckily, with this one, because I've worked with actors like Jerry Butler, you know, who doesn't have children, and you're trying to help influence your own family dynamics, right, into things. And so there's always going to be your own sensibilities that you're going to bring to things. But in this one, I had two stars. One with Jason, who again is, he might be a badass, but he's a huge softy, and very sensitive and super respectful and gracious with his two young kids. They're just such a great dynamic to see how he is, and how his love for them drives everything in his life, including with Rosie, his wife. And Bodhi has a great support group, great parents around her. But there's this weird kind of old soul about Bodhi, where she really understands emotion at 13 years old, and she was just turning 14 when we were shooting, that just kind of blows your mind. Like, where's that life experience come from? And so I was lucky to have two people that had undeniable chemistry. The minute we put them together, we interviewed 500 girls. And I remember seeing this freckled-haired girl on this tape, and it was just something about her, in her eyes and the way that she held herself. And when we brought her in, it was electric. And so my job was just to get the hell out of the way and allow their own authenticity and their own chemistry play, versus trying to tell you, hey, this is how family works, or this is how these dynamics. We would have more of a three-way conversation in moments of what loss means, what is trauma, what is isolation and exile, what does that do to a psyche of a human being. I love that this young girl, and we don't even know why, but she's trying to bring him a present, And I think that it's that great kind of subtextual thing that people have lost, no other people have lost. We connect. Like, it's, I did this documentary on PTSD with a Delta Force operator, and he told this great story, and I won't get too far off the subject, but he told this great story that he went to the late, I think it was the 70th anniversary of Normandy. And he saw an old veteran that was there on the beach, you know, and he got on the plane, and before he could even say anything, the old vet saw him, Tyler, and just said, "I'll see you on the beach." It's like they knew he was looking at another man of war. And I think that there's things about shelter that Jason and Bodhi bring about isolation and trauma and loss and what the weight of that can do and how precious it is for us to have family. And what I loved about this one, it had nothing to do with blood. It had to do with people that have nothing in common, mm-hmm. No relationship other than their bond, and trust in one another and that thirst to not be alone.
It was interesting because I kept expecting, well, I don't want to, no spoilers. I'm not going to get into spoilers here. Folks should watch the movie. It's going to be in theaters this weekend. Go check it out. It's really entertaining. And also, again, I think, as you say, thematically pretty deep and interesting here. I want to just circle back real quick to, you mentioned working with Tony Scott. I believe you were on Days of Thunder with him. Is that, mm-hmm. is that right? What did you, look, Tony Scott, one of the great filmmakers, one of the great action filmmakers, what was one of the things you picked up from him on set watching him work that you've brought to your own work that has helped inform your career as a director?
Well, I did a few movies with Tony, and I loved it how, one, he carried himself with respect, demanded respect, respected those around him, lived like just by the seat of his pants. You know, he just, there was this, always this energy that he was trying to seek more. He wanted more out of everything that he was doing and the best he could possibly do it. And if you go look at Days of Thunder, it's a completely different tone and journey than True Romance, another movie that I did with him. And so he was always authentic to the movie that he was making and not even trying to emulate himself ever, was always actually trying to say, this is who I am. I'm going to tell the story with my brand, but I'm also going to be truthful to what the story is. And I remember one moment that blew my mind, Al, like, I'm like, that right there is balls. Where he has Val Kilmer come in and play Elvis and never puts him on camera. He's always in the reflection or out of focus. And that is guts. Can you imagine being a filmmaker and you're bringing the great Val Kilmer and you're like, God, I don't get that close up. I mean, there, you know, like, and not just being truthful to the way he wanted to tell that story. That's what I take away from Tony Scott. I take a guy that did it his way, for better or for worse, lived or died by his own sword, he wanted to entertain you and he wanted his movies to be loved, but it's not what drove him. We all want our movies to be loved. We want all our art to work, but what needs to drive us is our own originality and our own unique voice. And hopefully I'm doing an ounce of that.
Yeah. I just one last stunt question. I'm sure you get this all the time. Maybe you're tired of it. I am curious what you make of the Oscars announcing a stunt category. Are you in favor? Because I know there's somewhat of a split between folks who think it's good, think it's bad. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know if I can curse on your program, but thank
Go
effing
for it.
God.
Go
thank
for it.
Fucking okay. God. It's, and anybody that tells you they're not for it, I don't, that's a self-serving statement. I don't even understand that point. I mean, it's so stupid to me because at the end of the day, we're all tradespeople. That's what the filmmaking is. We're all a bunch of blue collar working class people. I'm not wearing an ascot to the set. I'm picking up sandbags. I'm doing whatever it takes to get the day done because I came from the crew and everybody brings their wares to the table to collaborate and do something from the hair and makeup department and costumes and visual effects and special effects and then on and on and on and then post-production, all these different departments. How on God's green earth isn't the stunt coordinator a part of that equation has just been stupid. It's not even, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't think we should be applauding the greatest stunt. I don't think the stunt player should be a part of this. I think it's the stunt coordinator. I think it's the stunt coordinator and the choreographer who is actually designing action the way a special effects supervisor designs the special effects, the way that the sound mixer is mixing the sound, and the way that every department contributes for this thing that we build as a Rubik's cube. And God, we hope the whole, the colors line up and it, and it's magic. And every single person in that should be a part of that, that nomination process.
Great to hear. Cause I have the stunt award guys from Vulture on all the time. They love talking to them. I'm glad we're finally getting this, this out there. All right. We're running up against the time limit here. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if there's anything you want folks to know about your movie, the state of the world, whatever. What should folks know that we did not get to discuss here today?
I hope you see Shelter in the cinema. We're in an age right now, we've went through the perfect storm of a pandemic that really put streaming on the map, which is great. There's a lot of great content. But it really robbed us of the social experience of why we go to music concerts and not just listen to the same thing in our cars or in our headphones, right? Because it's a different experience seeing things live and with others and living it vicariously for 2 or 3 hours, whatever it may be, with everybody together. And I feel like everybody's getting back to that. And I feel like it's really all of us that needs to keep the theatrical experience alive. We're putting a lot of money into these things. I hope we're putting our heart and souls in them. I know I am. And I'm hopefully building you something that you get to go for 2 hours and you get an experience you're not going to get in home. I don't give a shit how good your home theater is. It's not the same of what we're going to pound you with and live through and immerse you in. So let's keep the theatrical experience alive. Let's keep our exhibitors alive and let's get our butts to the movies for 2 hours and go have fun and eat some popcorn. That's what this is about. And hopefully Shelter is a part of that. Hopefully you want to include us in that equation. But I loved how my wife and I, man, we go to the movies all the time. And yeah, I got a kick-ass home theater, but I love going to the movie theater and I love sitting with her and my sons and going to escape. And what I love is it's going from only about 10 people in that theater. And now these theaters are full and people are going again. And we just got to keep that ride going, man, because it's just too important to us all.
You're speaking my language, words that are dear to my heart. Rick Romanois, thank you for being on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, bud.
My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.